The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Plenty of Michigan football and basketball talk to come. Plus, we confront an inconvenient truth. Next on this week's episode of Michigan Podcast.
But there's going to be one team that's going to play solely as a team. No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. The team, the team, the team.
Looks deep for Anthony Carter. Waits for it, hit, caught.
This is no time for that. In the pocket and a sack. Tim Jamison.
Brady gets terrific.
Throws it, and a touchdown, night again.
Schultz, just before Frizzell got him, and a leaping interception by Woodson.
Harbaugh back to throw over the middle, caught by Colazar at the 5 on his feet, touchdown, Michigan.
On its way, it's good.
He's 5'7", 179 pounds, a junior at Michigan. But Jamie Morris packs a wallop, and he delivers for Bo Schembechler.
And here's your first play. Pressure coming, second. It is Glenn Steele, number 81, who fought his way through the traffic.
Option. And Robinson calls his own number, and he's going to score. Oh, an easy touchdown for Ron Robinson and Michigan.
Win it. We're going to win the championship again because we're going to play as a team. And when we play as a team and the old season is over, you and I know it's going to be Michigan again. Michigan.
Greetings and welcome to this week's episode of Michigan Podcast. I am Steve Dace, Michael Spath, and Brandon Brown from WTKA in Ann Arbor, and Wolverine Digest will be joining us here in the next segment for this week's roundtable conversation. But we begin with a story that has Michigan social media, Recruitnik social media, in a panic. We have gone full-blown Chernobyl. We've hit the 3 mile island button. Two prominent voices in 24/7's Recruit Verse, Steve Wilfong and Alan True, who do excellent work, have now crystal balled Donovan Edwards, considered one of the top five running backs in the 2021 recruiting class. Can you believe 2021? Anybody else feeling old? Anybody? The 2021 recruiting class. Donovan Edwards from the 2021 recruiting class ranked one of the top five running backs in the nation in that class, rated one of the top, yeah, maybe 30 players overall in that class. From Michigan's backyard, an in-state kid, it's been expected that he would end up as a Wolverine. Well, now he's being crystal balled to the evil empire, Ohio State. And people are having a meltdown. To which I have a simple question. Why? Now, on a personal note, I used to know Tony Alford, Ohio State's running backs coach, when he was at Iowa State University, and I covered Iowa State as a beat reporter. Fantastic running back coach. Fantastic guy. His players always produced, never fumbled. High character, just guy's an outstanding football coach. Did a great job for Brian Kelly at Notre Dame as well, for Urban Meyer at Ohio State, and now for Ryan Day. So I'm not shocked that any top running back recruit would be enamored with the idea of playing for Tony Alford, given his background and then given the program that he's at. But specifically, and I don't say that with any dissing of Jay Harbaugh, Michigan's running backs coach. I don't know him at all. And frankly, I think the running back performance has improved since he became the position coach there. But just looking at this vis-a-vis the specific comparison of Michigan and Ohio State, and saying this, sorry, I'm preemptive bile, but I don't know why any recruit would choose Michigan over Ohio State, especially at a skill position. I don't know why you would. The only reasons I can think of are personal. Yeah, you have a close personal relationship with a coach and the Michigan staff, and you want to spend the next 4 years of your life enjoying that relationship, or you just grew up as a fan, and that's, you know, or your parents were fans, and it's a family dream, your personal dream. But take the emotional, relationship aspect or fandom aspect out of it, and this is not even a debatable question. It's just not close, and I hate myself for admitting it. And I just threw up in my mouth a little. But this is nothing to be in a panic about. I mean, sometimes we act as if we are shocked at the consequences for our actions. Like, you know, your mama kept telling you don't go out there and play in traffic, and then you kept doing it, and you got away with it a bunch of times, but then eventually you don't. And you learn what the laws of momentum and inertia are all about as you're bleeding out there in the asphalt. You're like, I can't believe this happened to me. What did you try to listen to your mama ever? I mean, what did we think was going to happen when we got our ass kicked by these guys 15 years in a row? And in every one of those games, doesn't it seem like some tailback had like some long run against us too? I mean, J.K. Dobbins a couple times last year. But I mean, it seems like every year in this 15-year span of ass whoopings, there has been some Ohio State tailback that's gone off or some big run. So, I mean, this isn't a debatable point. You have to earn this on the field. And by the way, we're acting like this is decided. Signing day is not almost for, it's almost a year away. It's in December. It's 10 months from now. I mean, think back to when you were 16 or 17 years old. 10 months was like dog years. I mean, you could change your mind 75 times. But even if he goes, this is what happens when you allow yourself to be dominated. And Michigan did. Ohio State doesn't need much help. It's the winningest program in college football the last 60 years. But whether it's been the administrative decisions it's made, the coaching decisions it's made, the game day decisions it's made, Michigan made this bed and now has to sleep in it. So if you're tired of digging yourself a hole, put down the damn shovel. Win the game. Win the game. That's the solution here. Steve Dace here. I just want to say a quick thank you to our new partner, Surfshark, who knows that our entire lives are spent online and you need to make sure that you're protected. Surfshark is a VPN service that makes online protection easy. Don't you hate it when you get an ad that pops up online and makes you think, hey, who's listening in to what I'm doing here? Well, Surfshark helps to get rid of those targeted ads. And Surfshark makes sure nobody is seeing your personal info without your permission and protects you from hackers who are after either your emails or your passwords. It's super easy to use, too. Get Surfshark VPN at surfshark.deals/Michigan Podcast. That's surfshark.deals/Michigan Podcast. Enter promo code Michigan Podcast for 83% off and one extra month free. Promo code Michigan Podcast for 83% off and one extra month free. Try it out now and know that you are safe online. Surfshark VPN. Let's get to the Wolverine Digest Roundtable this week here on Michigan Podcast. And we got the full house back with us this week. Brandon Brown and Michael Spath, both of Wolverine Digest, as well as WTKA in Ann Arbor. Gentlemen, good to have you with us. Let's get right to it with the basketball. Michigan doing what it does every February now, 22-7 in the month of February since 2017. And when you consider all of those would have been games at the height of Big Ten conference play during an era when Big Ten basketball has been as good as it's been in several years, that's even more impressive. We kind of knew what the MO for this February surge was under John Beilein, but this is a new coach, and a lot of the different players and even guys who were here last year are playing bigger roles in most cases than they were expected to, and yet we're still seeing that same culture. What do you attribute it to, Michael Spath? Is it just as simple as this is Michigan when Isaiah Livers is healthy in the lineup, or is it something more?
Well, I wrote about this earlier in the week, and I think the word that you just used there that I agree with is culture. I think what Michigan football enjoyed for 4 or 5 decades, what Michigan hockey enjoyed for the better part of Red Berenson's career until the very end, and what John Beilein established at Michigan with the help of some great leaders like Stu Douglas and Zach Novak, and then Trey Burke, and then Nick Stauskas took over for them. I mean, look at how many times you've lost a key leader. Jordan Morgan, who's considered a heart and soul type player, and then someone steps into his void. And so I think what you've got here is you've got a culture of success, a culture of winning, a culture of responsibility, where one class, seniors, sometimes juniors, pass it along to the next class, and then those guys pass it along. And I mean, look at like the player that David DeJulius is emerging into, the player Eli Brooks is, Brandon Johns. Like, these are your next generation of leaders that are going to take over for Simpson and Teske someday. And so I think you've got this really incredible culture that has been built and is now being sustained even with the change in coaching staffs. And so that's what I attribute a lot of Michigan's success to at this point in the season.
Brandon, you're the person over at Wolverine Digest who covers the press conferences, the team avails, the games, from the court eye view, if you will, there on press row. So you've seen this team and this program up close and personal more than any of us have, and certainly probably just about anybody in the audience. A month ago, this team was in 12th place in the Big Ten. A month later, they're a top 12 team in the country, according to Ken Palm's renowned analytics. Can you walk us through, did you see any signs that this was coming, even during that stretch, the 11 games that they didn't have Isaiah Livers, where they went, 5-6 in those games? Can you point out where you're like, you know what, I can see where this thing is going to turn around here? Did you see any of those signs?
It's hard to say. I mean, I can't really pinpoint a time where I thought, like, okay, they're just about there. I really don't think there was anything like that. I guess, certainly Isaiah Livers being out and then coming back and seemingly, you know, jumped right back in playing 30 minutes and was pretty productive and has been very good since coming back from an injury like that. That was a very pleasant surprise and obviously a pretty big shot in the arm for the team in terms of what they're trying to do on the court, and then just him as a person, a player, or a person, a personality, a leader, his communication on the court. I mean, it took all of that to another level. I just think, like, when you look at the team 1 through 8, I guess is probably the best way to look at it now, because those are the guys, the starting five, and then David DeJulius, Brandon Johns Jr., and Austin Davis, who are getting the run of the minutes. Like, they're just talented. I mean, it's a very good 8 players top to bottom. I don't know if there's many other teams in the conference who can go 8 deep that have enough guys to contribute like Michigan does. And Juwan Howard has said it many times throughout the year, and it kind of sounds like a cliche or coach speak, and we don't really want to hear it, you know, when you're going through a 4-game losing streak and when Isaiah Livers is hurt. But he said, yeah, like, it takes time. He's like, he used the term microwave society the other day. You know, we're in a microwave society. We want everything right now. We want it done and it just to be full go. But that's not really how it works in basketball with a new coach, a new system, a new staff. Like you said, Steve, a bunch of new players playing in a role that they haven't really had before. And it did just take a little time. Now, Michigan got off to such a hot start early that everybody just kind of assumed maybe that it was going to be that way for the whole year. But that wasn't really realistic. And then Isaiah Livers gets hurt, and it takes an even bigger hit. And now they're surging at the right time. So to answer your question directly, no, I don't really remember a moment where I thought, like, okay, they're about to turn this corner. But it has happened gradually, getting Isaiah Livers back, playing better defense, the growth of Franz Wagner, a freshman who was injured at the beginning of the year, kind of all these things stirred up in a pot, and it's kind of just getting ready right now at the perfect time.
Brandon, let's go back to what Michael was talking about there with culture and what he wrote about this week at Wolverine Digest, mm-hmm. because Isaiah Livers is obviously a link to that culture. And so were John Teske and Xavier Simpson, but the difference is he's a far more polished and well-rounded and gifted offensive player than they are. In fact, the Big Ten Network, a couple of their analysts did a fantasy draft, pick your starting five, and you know, so who they thought were essentially the top 10 players in the Big Ten, and Isaiah Livers was one of those players. I think he's the best wing player in the Big Ten. So maybe he's not quite to the level yet of a Luka Garza, a Cassius Winston, but you know, let's go to Michigan State. Where would they be without Xavier Tillman? Because what the loss of Isaiah Livers did is it forced everybody to play a role that maybe they're not quite accustomed to or ready to yet. And putting Isaiah Livers back in the lineup, now everybody gets to settle into their roles. I mean, look at Franz Wagner. He was playing the best wing defender on every team every night. And now he's playing the second or third best wing defender on every team. And pardon me, most teams don't have two or three good wing defenders. And you're seeing the difference. The floor has opened up for him tremendously with the addition of Isaiah Livers, not having to rely on John Teske to carry you offensively. Defensively, he's improved quite a bit the last couple of weeks. And now we saw against Purdue, he's getting a little bit more aggressive offensively again. I think it just settles that entire lineup because it puts everybody in their proper roles, which feeds into that culture. What are your thoughts?
100%. I've written about that exact topic a couple of times. And I think Brandon Johns, who you didn't specifically mention, is maybe the most prime example because he did great when he stepped in. Maybe great's too strong, but he did a good job coming in and starting 9 or 10 games while Isaiah Livers was out, maybe not quite ready for that role yet, but he had some really good performances in there. But him coming off the bench as perhaps the sixth man is like the perfect role for him, right, as a sophomore because of his size at 6'8", 220s, 230. He's a freak of an athlete. He runs up and down the floor like a deer. He's good for a couple of hustle plays. He can block shots. He rebounds, offensive rebounds really well. He's proven to be able to step out and hit the three. He's not the offensive player that Isaiah Livers is, but he's cut from that cloth. He's able to stretch the floor. He's able to go inside. He's been much more aggressive, putting the ball on the deck. He is perfect in that role. The 15 to 18 minutes come in, you know, bang around a little bit, dive on the floor, foul a couple guys, just hustle plays. That's exactly what he's able to do right now. When he was playing 30-plus minutes as a starter, it just was out of his wheelhouse a little bit. He did fine, but I agree with you 100%. Isaiah Livers back in the lineup settles everybody down. It makes the actual play on the court better with Isaiah Livers getting, you know, 14, 18 points a game and handful of rebounds and the way he can defend pretty much 1 through 5. But it allows everybody else to be comfortable and do what they're supposed to do at the highest level. And again, the leadership and the culture and the communication, all those things that Isaiah Livers is very comfortable doing, it just elevates everybody around him. So I agree. I think it's a combination of what he specifically does, his ripple effect on everybody else, and then just that culture of winning a lot of games. Guys like Xavier Simpson, John Teske, and of course Livers.
So, Michael, let's go then to the ceiling for this team. I mentioned they're in the top 12 overall in KenPom. Since KenPom's analytics began in 2002, only one team that wasn't in the top 25 of both its offense and defensive efficiency rankings has won the NCAA tournament, and that was the UConn Kevin Ollie Shabazz Napier team. Everybody else has been in the top 25. Michigan now is in the top 25 in both offensive and defensive efficiency. I think they're one of 8 teams right now that make up and compile that list. The T-Rank, that's Bart Torvik's kind of free version, poor man's version of KenPom, ranks Michigan the best team in the country in the month of February. In games Isaiah Livers plays, I believe Michigan is second or third in offensive efficiency in the Big Ten. We've seen how much that defense has improved. We saw what they were able to do in the non-conference. That win over Creighton looks better and better every single day. What is this team's ceiling? Because I think there's about 25 to 30 teams this year, that if they get the right draw, their ceiling could potentially be the final Monday night or the first Monday night in April. And I think Michigan, if Livers is in the lineup, is on that list. What do you think?
You know, it's an interesting question because the Big Ten is regarded this year as the best conference, or at least one of the two best conferences in college basketball. And so, you know, it's really hard at this point in the year to compare, look across and go like, well, when Gonzaga's meeting up with somebody, or you look in the Pac-12, there's just a big battle between Oregon and Arizona, or you've got Kentucky playing somebody, Louisville taking on Duke in the ACC. And so it's really hard to say like, well, that team's way better than this team that we see on a regular basis. I'll say this, with Isaiah Livers in the fold, Michigan has pretty close to a complete team. They have a low post presence, whether it's Austin Davis coming off the bench or if John Teske can get back to being the player that we started to see over the weekend at Purdue. You know, they don't have a play, they don't have a scoring point guard, but they have a playmaking point guard that can create a lot of good opportunities for other players. And Eli Brooks, and then David DeJulius, and then Isaiah Livers, and then Franz Wagner. They have guys that can shoot the three at a high percentage clip sometimes. And if they all those guys click on the same day, then I don't think there's anything that says that this team couldn't play in the Final Four. Do they get that far? I mean, so much of it is about matchups and who else you're running into. Are you, you know, Michigan has been one of the really hot teams, but then last year they ran into Texas Tech, which was a hotter team that played better defense. Mm-hmm. And Texas Tech ultimately vanquished Michigan. And then Texas Tech ran into a hotter team and a better team in Virginia. And so when do you find yourself in that matchup? Do you run into that really hot team in the second round? Do you not see them until the Elite Eight? My goodness, everybody talks about how Michigan State got all the way to the Final Four and then lost to Texas Tech. Well, I say if Michigan wouldn't have played Texas Tech until the Final Four, they would have gotten there a year ago. So it really just comes down to when you run into that team and how hot you are. But I certainly think that Michigan is a complete team when it has has a healthy Isaiah Livers on the roster.
Let's switch and talk a couple of football topics. Story out today from a couple of news outlets, including the Detroit News, talking with Shea Patterson, Michigan's former quarterback, who's at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis this weekend after, let's face it, he lost himself some money with what happened at the Senior Bowl by all reports. So he's trying to make some of that back and improve his draft stock. One of the 200-plus players that are invited to Indianapolis to try out in front of NFL scouts. And he admitted that he wanted to seek out a fifth year at Michigan and thought, you know, I know there were some rumors along these lines, Michael, that I believe you were actually reported on at the time back in December, that there was a reasonable chance that he might have been able to get a fifth year. But he said he just couldn't risk the timing because he wouldn't find out probably until mid to late February, which means he would risk missing the Senior Bowl and all of the tryout opportunities. And so he wanted to come back to Michigan for another year, but he just couldn't risk the uncertainty. Your thoughts on that? How much of that was one-sided? How much of that was two-sided? That Michigan was interested in that fifth year as well? Because given what we've seen from him so far, I'll just tell you guys, I follow this draft process really closely. I mean, he got absolutely annihilated by scouts Senior Bowl practice week. Annihilated. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was probably the most criticized player down in Mobile. Here's why I think this question is germane, so that I don't want to, you know, be accused of leading you guys on. Here's why I think the question is germane. Because given how inconsistent he was this past year, now he did close on a strong note until the last, you know, the second half against Ohio State, I believe he didn't complete a pass. A lot of that, frankly, wasn't his fault. A lot of drops. He was absolutely brutal in the Citrus Bowl against Alabama. Terrible. And then you look at his performance in Mobile, and if Michigan was anxious in bringing him back for a fifth year, should we take that as a sign that they're not overly confident and the guys that they have in waiting in the wings and Dylan McCaffrey and Joe Milton? How do you tackle that multi-layered question there? Michael Spath, we'll start with you.
Yeah, you know what? I don't really think it has anything to do with Joe Milton and Dylan McCaffrey. I honestly, from everybody that I've spoken to the last couple of weeks about the quarterback situation, about Shea Patterson, I think you had one person, the man in charge, who was overly loyal to Shea Patterson, and I think Jim Harbaugh would have been a fan of Shea coming back for a fifth year. I don't think there's any other coach on that staff, any other player on that staff that would have been, would they have liked to have had him back? Would they have been okay with him coming back? Sure. But are they sitting there going like, man, if we don't have Shea, we got nothing. I don't think that's the case. I think a lot of guys are excited to see this quarterback battle take place between Dylan and Joe. Joe's got a faction of guys that really like him. Dylan is one of the most well-respected players on the team, to the point where this year, even before he is, even before he's named the starting quarterback, if he wins it, he could be named the captain for this team. So I don't read too much into that. I wonder if, someone asked Shea Patterson this exact same question before the Senior Bowl, he would answer the same way. I think a little bit of him now looks back on this and says, man, I didn't perform at the Senior Bowl. I had a bad finish to my senior season. I could have really used a fifth year to come back and showcase myself one more time. I think it's more of an indictment of what Shea Patterson thinks about his pro prospects, that he's willing to go out there on the record and say, yeah, it would have been great to have one more season in this offense. I haven't read the entire quote. I saw that Aaron McMahon from MLive tweeted it out and just read the quoted tweet on Twitter. But I wonder a lot more about that Shea's kind of acknowledging, I'm not in the best spot for my NFL future. And maybe a little bit of regret that he doesn't have one more opportunity. I don't know. Looking back on it, he played in enough games as a freshman. I know that they have kind of grandfathered some of these guys in there. I don't know that if he ever would have gotten a fifth year.
That's an interesting angle you just took there, that this is a bit of revisionist history or 2020 hindsight because of the way that the draft season has gone for Shea Patterson so far. Brandon, what's your read on this?
It's similar to Mike's. I mean, I don't, based on how he played last year, the up and downs, the overthrows, injury at the beginning of the year, not pushing the ball down the field as much as I'm sure a lot of people would have liked to see, not keeping the ball on zone reads that look to be, I just think he left a lot on the field, and I can't imagine, to Mike's point, that people inside that building, coaches or players, are crying in their hands that he's not coming back. We talked about it on the radio earlier this or yesterday about, I just think that the ceiling is hot. Not knowing who the starter is going to be, not having seen much of Joe Milton or Dylan McCaffrey in the past, I think the ceiling is automatically higher with either of them than it is with Shea Patterson. Now the floor could be lower, but I think with the way that Michigan has recruited and the kind of offense that Josh Gattis wants to run, a change was not only necessary, but could be a spark for a better offensive season in 2020, more points being scored, all the things that college football is about nowadays, being able to push the ball down the field. I certainly hope that was part of the discussion with Nico Collins and what talked him into coming back. Like, hey, 50-50 balls were more like 70-30 balls with you this year, and we're going to do that a lot more with Dylan or Joe than we did with Shea. I don't know if that conversation took place, but I would imagine that it did. And, I hadn't thought about that angle that Mike brought up either, but I can definitely see Shea saying, like, dang, I'd like to have another year in Ann Arbor now after all the way all this stuff played out. So, I don't know. I don't think a lot of really diehard Michigan fans are going to be too upset reading, like, oh, man, Shea wanted to come back and now he's not. Like, what a bummer. I don't see it that way. And I would be willing to bet that the coaches, with no recorder in their face and a fly on the wall situation, might say the same thing.
Finally, gentlemen, are you excited that we will get to retire, at least for this year, one of the great Michigan fan tropes? Now, this was actually referenced for the last couple of months by Chris Ballas at the Wolverine, had been reporting that it looked like there was going to be no off-season trip for Michigan this year, or that this would become an every four-year event so that each individual class got to do one of these foreign trips rather than trying to pull it off every single year. Well, yesterday, the university made it official that they're not going to do one and gave the the coronavirus as the official explanation and some concerns about overseas travel, whichever the official story is that led to not doing it any longer. This has been within Michigan fandom. You guys know this very well, even better than I do. You had far bigger Michigan social media fan followings than I do, so you hear it far more than I do. But this has been a grinded axe every offseason. Hey, Ohio State's not, you know, doing an African safari or visiting the Pope. They're thinking about how to beat Michigan. Alabama and Clemson, all they care about is winning football games. You know, maybe, you know, instead of practicing in France, you know, practice for Ohio State, right? You guys have heard all of these, okay? So since there will be no offseason trip this year, I have to believe that encourages or increases Michigan's odds of finally beating Ohio State by what percentage point? Brandon, I'll start with you. What are the odds go up now as it stands today?
None. Zero. I don't think that matters at all. I think the trip is pretty cool. I get where fans are coming from. It's frustrating when you have these football powerhouse programs that are just, you know, up and down the field and will just wax Michigan, and one of them has waxed Michigan a lot of times over the last 15 years. I don't think that has anything to do with it. I don't. I mean, I'm fine with them not going on the trip and maybe focusing up a little bit more and having it be more about football in the spring than that trip, which is certainly a massive undertaking for everybody involved. But in the grand scheme of where the season is, you know, where the team is by late November, I think it's literally zero effect whatsoever.
Michael, are you looking forward to finally winning the game since Michigan is taking the full, not taking 2 weeks out of the critical May preparation schedule to focus squarely on Ohio State and the obvious advantage that will grant us?
Well, I tell you what, if Michigan finds a way to beat Ohio State this year, then we're all going to look back and go like, see, all they need to do is not take that.
Do you know what our feeds are going to look like if they pulled that off? Holy crap, don't read them. You're right. That's told you not to go on that trip. Nobody listened to me. You're exactly right about that. Yes.
No, I mean, you guys have made the good points. I mean, look, it occurs after the semester's over with. It occurs after spring football has ended. It occurs in a time period, usually in May, where there is no football-related activities. You know, they're not doing 7-on-7 type stuff. They're not in a massive working out yet. They're kind of, it's a cool down period. It's always good for team bonding, which is one of the things that every school tries to do. Alabama tries to do it. Ohio State tries to do it. Everybody talks about whether it's, you know, built Habitat for Humanity or doing some type of volunteer work. Like, all these schools try to do team bonding activities to have a better relationship between their players. So I've never thought it was a big deal. It has no reason, no bearing whatsoever on why Michigan has not been successful against Ohio State or in their bowl games. It was a really cool opportunity for these guys. And, you know, I find it a little odd that they cited the coronavirus as the reason they canceled it when they never told us where they were headed to. I mean, there's a lot of countries in the world right now that are not being impacted by the coronavirus, and they could have picked any one of those. But you know what? Better, I guess, safe than sorry at this point. And you don't know what will be happening across the world in the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever Michigan wants to do, that's totally fine.
Well, they could. How about taking your team out to California to train with Navy SEALs? Oh, wait. Yeah, that was done once. And the coach did that and then went 5-7 and got fired. So never mind. Let's not follow that precedent. Gentlemen, it's good to have you back with us again on Wolverine Digest. Thanks for joining us here this week here at Michigan Podcast.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, take care. Don't forget, you can stay up to date with everything we talk about here on Michigan Podcast in between episodes by visiting our website at WolverineDigest.com. Again, that's WolverineDigest.com. Myself, Michael Spath, and Brandon Brown keep you up to date each and every day on everything trending and happening with the Maize and Blue. So again, if you want to stay up to date on those Michigan Wolverines, go to WolverineDigest.com. Again, that's WolverineDigest.com. This week's Twitter poll, we asked, who do you think is the best current coach at the University of Michigan? And you can't really go wrong with, well, the top three. I'm kind of surprised Jim Harbaugh got that many votes, to be brutally honest with you. But the top three are easy. I mean, you look at what Mike Bottom has done there with the swim program, Eric Bakich, and taking the baseball team to the final out of the College World Series last year. And then Carroll Hutchins, who's won a natty and is pretty much the Big Ten champion. She's like the Urban Meyer of Big Ten softball and deserving of the number one vote in that poll. But those top three are outstanding. If you want to credit Coach Harbaugh, his resume at Michigan is not as good as those top three. But if you want to credit him for his overall contributions as a coach, I mean, what he's done to rebuild the brand, to increase revenue, fan support, which certainly helps the top three coaches on that list who rely on football success for their own, then I'm fine with him being on that list. But in terms of actual on the field achievement, he's not done anything at Michigan even close to what the other three have done. Let's get to this week's question of the week. And it comes from Randall Porter, who says, did you mean to say last week Michigan State or Michigan is only playing an 11-game schedule in football this year? Let me take that again. Can I do that again? Do you mind, Aaron?
Okay.
Let's get to this week's question of the week. And it comes from Randall Porter, who asks, did you mean to say last week Michigan is only playing an 11-game schedule in football this year? I'm pretty sure we play 12. Well, Randall, maybe Michigan plays a 12-game schedule in your world, but in my world, that is not the case. They are transitioning to an 11-game schedule because I have a deeply embedded desire to stop getting my ass whooped and myself face-planted, embarrassed the Saturday of Thanksgiving weekend every year. I tried it. In fact, Lent begins tomorrow, and I'm giving it up for Lent, for Evs. So if Michigan wants me to count that 12th game, Michigan's got to make the 12th game count. I'm not doing it anymore. So my understanding is Michigan's on a bye. If I'm incorrect, it's too late, because I'm going to be at the IMAX here in town watching Kong versus Godzilla the Saturday after Thanksgiving instead of the tradition unlike any other, a complete and total curb stomp embarrassment. I don't do those anymore. I like enjoying my holiday. Now, if you like ruining your holiday and your weekend and really your entire season by acknowledging a 12th game that does not exist. But you would like to acknowledge it nevertheless, you know, it's a free country. By all means, you're free to be as miserable as you would like. But I prefer to be happy and gay, particularly at the most wonderful time of the year. So it's an 11-game schedule for me. Michigan's final game against Indiana. And then after that, we wait and see what bowl game we get. So that's how we roll here on Michigan Podcast until someone convinces us otherwise. And we're over there at the Schembechler building. That's where they reside. Everybody have a great week. Thanks for tuning in here this week on Michigan Podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Michigan Podcast and check us out every day online at WolverineDigest.com. You can also like, rate, subscribe, whether it's YouTube or a podcast platform, whichever the case may be. Please keep those coming. The more of those we get, the more it helps us to grow and find other Michigan fans just like you. Until next week, go Blue.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.